What's the name of their mob? What's your language group mob?
Oh, Jugendbears. Yeah, Jugendbear language group, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, this exhibition, Transforming Tyndale. Who's Tyndale?
He was a scientist based in Adelaide, and he had a very long career from the early 1920s right up until his death in early 1990s. He actually retired to California. But in that time, you know, he did a massive amount of work. I think you could call him an overachiever if you look at, you know, what he achieved in his life. And in particular, he's well known for his work actually telling the world, essentially, that Aboriginal people were not nomadic and they actually had firm tribal boundaries. And he produced a map in the early 1940s that became quite well known. But this exhibition, we're really only looking at 6 months of his life from the last half of 1938.
Before we go there, Tyndale's a man that stated that First Nations people were not nomadic. How's our mob take that? Is that a good thing? What's the feedback? Or what's that perception of our mob? Do we see ourselves?
Well, I think it was a groundbreaking thing at the time because there was a belief that Aboriginal people just wandered around Australia, had aimlessly, it had no structured society and essentially no tribal boundaries and no nations. So he was the academic that really challenged the mainstream belief at the time. And he put out this map in 1941. It was, again, I think, republished in 1974. And it's been, versions of it have been, you know, become quite famous and reproduced all over the country.
Can you describe that map for the benefit of our listeners, roughly?
Well, it's a map that just really shows the tribes, you know, these boundaries all over Australia, everybody locked into, you know, within certain areas. I mean, a lot of Aboriginal people disagree with those boundaries and the actual names of the tribes that he used. I've got, you know, disagreements in my own area from some of the things he wrote. But in general, I think it's not the actual boundaries. It's the very fact that he actually put something on the table that then challenged the belief that Aborigines were not nomadic people.
Was this bloke an Aussie or Pommy? Wasn't he? Where was his origins?
Origins, he was Australian. And he actually spent part of his parents were in the church. He actually spent part of his upbringing in growing up in Japan. So he had sort of quite a diverse life and he retired to California where he spent the later part of his life.
He's also known to measure people's heads and how far their knuckles were from the ground and things like that.
He was, this expedition that he started on in 1938 and 1939 was the first time mixed descent Aboriginal people were studied in any detail. The previous year he went to America and met a scientist over there called Joseph Birdsall. He secured some funding from America and that's why the expedition was called Harvard Adelaide University's Anthropological Expedition. And so he had this particular interest in the descent of people and particular mixed descent people. So he wanted to see what would happen to people if they mixed with Chinese or Islander or European people. So I guess in summary you could say he had a particular interest in skin colour and I guess the future of Aboriginal skin colour, what would happen with multiple mixing of descent and what would Aboriginal society look like in 100 or 200 years' time.
Interesting, considering that there's a lot of discussion at the moment on skin colour and who's more Aboriginal than somebody else or who's more disadvantaged and who's more black and who's all this sort of rubbish and stuff where some of our mob are using that white perspective, those white terms of reference, as Auntie Mary Graham and Auntie Little would say. They're not talking from a black framework or a First Nations perspective, First Nations terms of reference. Anyway, you said that this exhibition is based on just a snapshot of 6 months of Tyndale's work.
Yes, it's only a tiny part of his career. He took somewhere in the order of about 5,000 photos on that whole 18-month expedition. So what we've been working with, Vernon Key and I, we've been working with a set of photos of 1,100 people that were copied from the South Australian Museum about 20 years ago and copies were placed here in the State Library. So for the last 20 years, Aboriginal people have had access to those, Queensland Aboriginal people have had access to those photos. So that's been the basis, looking at these set of photos of 1,100 people taken over really only a six-month period. And even though there's so much, like we've just been discussing, so much politics and so much about this whole... And it did happen. There was measuring of people, measuring all types of invasive issues, exactly what skin colour to menstrual cycles to all types of things. And but these standard, what they call standard portraits, were taken, and they were a side shot and then a front shot. And that's what I've been looking at. I mean, my main interest in professionally is photographs. And this is an incredible set of photos. So you look at them and you actually start looking past the politics of what Tyndale was actually trying to pursue as far as from a scientific point of view, and just look at them as portraits. And they are incredible photos. And some of the people look not happy. They don't look like they want to be there. And others look you know, like they don't mind at all. So a lot of contradictions in these photos.
So what, have you thought, that thought of fleeting thought, thinking that you've died and gone to heaven with all these photos around, did that come across your mind?
Yeah, it was, especially I started this project in January, and because I don't have, because both the library here in Brisbane and also the South Australian Museum, they've been, in a sense, restricted access to these photos to people who have direct family. So I've got a few sort of distant connections to some of the people in the photos, but essentially no direct family. So I've really haven't had much to do with the Tyndale photos until this year. And then I'm just basically immersed myself in this set of photos of 1,100 people. So it's been a real challenge looking at these people in the face and getting to know them, and then meeting some of the people that are in the photos and meeting plenty of their family as well. So...
Well, what particular 6 months? Who decided on 6 months, and why this particular 6 months? And what time frame is this 6 months? What year?
He started the expedition, I think, in about May 1938, leaving Adelaide with Joseph Birdsall and both their wives, Dorothy Tyndall and B. Birdsall. And they first stop was Brewarrina, and they documented about 250 people there. Then they moved on to Bogabilla, which is in New South Wales but not far from the Queensland border, then to Woodenbong, and then five Queensland communities, Mona Mona, Yarrabah, Palm Island, Woorabinda and Cherbourg. And then by the time they finished at Cherbourg, it was December 1938. So 20 years ago, it was those seven communities, photos from those seven communities that were copied and placed here in the State Library. So even though he visited Queensland other times, he's got a massive amount of other work relevant to Queensland. I guess it's just for some reason that was only a limited amount of information that was copied and placed here in the State Library, and there's still a lot more in the South Australian Museum.
What's the important thing? What's it mean to our mob, First Nations community? What's the important aspect of this work, this exhibition, for you?
I think there's a lot of politics with this. I mean, it's raising issues of how Aboriginal images can be portrayed in institutions. It's the issues of trying to get that balance of restricting access to some materials to particular Aboriginal families, and also the issues of this is part of history, and by displaying them, it makes them accessible to to the broad range, entire families, and many people from the families of the people in these photos may not have had access to them. Some people have been very fortunate, like Vernon R. Key's family had access to them going back to the late 80s. Other families are, not so fortunate.
Well, I'm talking about Vernon R. Key, maybe we should get him to talk for himself over here about his own experiences after just arriving back in the country about an hour ago. It was a day or so ago. But Vernon, welcome to the program. How are you, brother?
I'm good. I'm awake.
All right. The listeners might believe you, but I had to look twice just to make sure. But that's all right, that you were awake. No, you're right, brother. You're right. Tell us your mob, your country, brother.
I think of myself as a rainforest black fella. I'm specifically from three rainforest groups and East Cape group, East Cape and West Cape, and from Wanyu mob round Mount Isa.
All right. You've got quite an established career, quite a name for yourself. When did you aspire or realise that art was your thing and you were able to commit your day-by-day work, your life to just art?
I think gradually art kind of became a bigger part of my thinking after I went to art school, and I was teaching for some time, and I gave that away about 7 years ago, And since then, I've just been making art full time. And the idea of kind of making art, what I want to do in terms of talking for blackfellas and about blackfellas and for myself as well, that's kind of just grown since. So it's all I really want to do now.
So what's important to you, 21st century blackfella artist? You're travelling the world, and people are seeing your work. What's important to you as an artist, blackfella artist today?
I think I'm just one of those blackfellas that has lots of questions. You know, there's a lot of things about our history that I want answers to. You know, and we all do, and I think, you know, some of us are in a position where we can ask those questions pretty hard, pretty broadly, to people who should be able to provide those answers, and in areas where we should be able to find answers. So that's one thing that I see a role for myself here in Australia.
So what, are you creating images that ask these questions or that challenges people?
Yeah, I mean, I think all art should ask questions, and I think I have lots of questions built into my art practice that I want to ask, and but internationally too, I think my art is the kind of art that deals with universal themes and points of interest in terms of where Native people see themselves, and it's not just blackfellas here in Australia, it's Native people around the world. I travel quite a bit, and when you, as a blackfella, when you start travelling, you know yourself, when you start travelling internationally, when you kind of just behave as a blackfella and you talk to other black people in a way that black people recognise, you realise very, very quickly that you belong to, well, we all do, we belong to a world culture of Native people. That's our community, and that's where I see a lot of resonance. That's where I see a lot of answers. It's also where I see a lot of questions, and I'm able to ask these questions.
What's your favourite in art, in your field now? What gives you that real satisfaction that you really enjoy doing? I mean, here you are working with Michael on this Tyndale exhibition. You're creating art. What do you really feel good about? What do you really enjoy doing?
What I really love is when you walk into some spaces or you just strike up conversations with some black fellas, young fellas and artists emerging who are unknown, but their ideas are really strong and their identities are intact and they want to exercise them. Because a lot of black fellas, you know, we've been under pressure to always keep our identities in flux or upheaval. You know, but you see a lot of blackfellas who say, no, well, this is who I am, and I also have questions, and you know, and I want to talk to other people who want to ask the questions with me and stand with me. And when I see blackfellas like that, oh, look, it's really heartening, eh? You know, and when they want to make artwork about that, rather than kind of tap into what's popular or fashionable, they're willing to kind of risk being marginalised because of their ideas and the art that they want to make, you know. And when I see that, you know, then that's strength to me, you know. And it strengthens me, you know. I kind of think that there were lots of artists before me who performed that role and said, you know, you can stand up. We are, and I try to do that for other artists. And when I see other artists coming through, oh, it's heartening, I tell you.
Tyndale, what does it mean to you? Michael mentioned earlier that your family was accessing some of your history, photos, images of Tyndale back in quite some years ago, 80s, I think he said.
Yeah, probably late 80s, early 90s. I think my family is just a normal family, but my grandma, my first encounter with the Tyndale images, and I didn't know they were Tyndale images at the time, was my grandmother used to carry these little images around in her purse, and I knew who they were, because I was told who they were. But the idea that they came from this collection that was down in Adelaide was only kind of a very abstract idea. And then I moved to Brisbane in the early 90s, And I found out that the archive was accessible in the library here, and so I managed to get reprints of the images, and they were amazing to me, particularly my great grandparents, who I never knew, and did not really know what they looked like, and so that was pretty amazing to me. But my interest in Tyndale is not really him himself. It's the collection and what it means for blackfellas. And so all of my focus is really on the back end of the collection when it's out of the museum and in the hands of blackfellas, when the data is in the hands of families. And so this collection really, well, this exhibition, but the collection itself is really a story about families. And it should be. It's been twisted in 100 different ways, but it's still for families to decide where the leaves fall on the ground.
So is this exhibition a part of that process? Do you see it sort of launching itself or lending itself towards being valued by community to access?
Yeah, well, it already is, but you know, there's lots of families who don't really know how to access the collection. They don't really know how to apply the data and the images and the knowledge that's encompassed in that research that Tyndale did. And as time goes forward, I think a lot of families will slowly and slowly work out how to utilise that material and the knowledge and the data. And I think that's exciting too. There's going to be a lot of work done, both, you know, in practice with the images, but also with the data itself. And I think the, you know, families ultimately will decide for themselves what is the most appropriate way to use that collection.
What's been the highlights for you? Any special moments on this particular exhibition, putting it together, working on it?
I think the main two highlights was, you know, having the opportunity to have this many of my artworks in one space, the big drawings. That's the first time this many have been in one space. But also it's a nice space, but working with Michael too. Michael and I have known each other for some time, and it was great. I was only thinking on the way into town that, you know, as a visual artist, I have an idea of an exhibition like this, and Michael's training is different to mine, and he would have a different idea, and we kind of meet in the middle, and I feel like we've done that, and it's because we've known each other for a while, and we both wanted to work together to achieve something with this exhibition. And at the beginning, we both agreed that this was an exhibition about families, Brisbane families, and it's a Brisbane story for this exhibition. So that's what we got.
Your artwork is massive images. Where did you? I mean, you don't see many people that are doing massive images, black in our mob, like you're doing. I mean, what is it that inspired you? What is it about the big images rather than just little tiny pictures that hang on the wall? I mean, you want a blinking warehouse for your stuff, you know. You got to find a space big enough to have that sort of artwork so you can work on as well, which must be a challenge sometimes.
I wish I had a warehouse, you know. If there's anyone out there who's got a spare warehouse for me to work in, just give me a call. But, I mean, look, there's a few things. For me, there's a lot that can be achieved in portraiture, and I want to make our people big, you know. I want the portraits to be not just imposing but demanding. You know, I want to achieve this gaze in the portraits in the eyes. I want people to look into these eyes, and these big portraits stare back, and there's questions that in these eyes, in the looks on the faces, and the shape of the faces and the skin. In the, you know, the nose and the mouth and the ears and the shape of the jawline is all interesting, and that's what portraiture is about. But it's these eyes that want to ask questions, and when you stand in front of them, you know, you should be able to feel it.
You can feel it, all right. I feel those eyes drilling right through me when I was down there checking them out. I mean, it's just amazing. The photo on the pamphlet, Transforming Tyndale, is a member of your family?
Yeah, that's my great-grandmother, Annie R. Sam. She's married to George Sibley on Palm Island at the time the photos were taken. So her name is Annie Sibley in the records. But in my family, she's almost exclusively referred to as Annie R. Sam. So Annie R. Sam's out there, hello.
So, all your mob?
Yeah, all my mob. I'm related to all Grogans and Sibley mob or Palm Island mob. So there's a lot of people on Palm Island. So.
Any messages from you for the mob, for community, with this exhibition going, access to the Tyndale photos and things? What do you got to say to our mob out there?
Look, this exhibition's been open for a couple of weeks, but what we're really looking forward to, Michael and I, is feedback that we get from community in maybe a month or so, or a couple of months, once people have been starting to engage with the collection, and we see families coming in and engaging with the photographs and the histories that are there. They're embedded in these faces of these people. You know, and I know from my own experience that there will be revelation and, you know, ideas around tragedy and history and secrets and lies and truths and history. And those are all the things that are in everyone's family, certainly in mine. And, you know, when you have families of hundreds of people, then for me that's a normal family. So, you know, and you're saying, well, you know, where's my inspiration from? And I just say, you know, my inspiration is comes from the same place as all my shame, all my heroes and my shame come from the same place in my family. And that's how I know I have a normal family, you know. So, but particularly my grandfathers are the people who I think of often, you know, being lucky enough to grow up with them. So yeah, but that's where we are right now.
Well, that's a fantastic piece of work, and it must have been good experience working with Michael, but to see the results of the combined efforts of you blokes is really good. And thanks for joining us today, and good luck with it, with all your work from here on in.
Thank you. Thank you, Toya.
Back to Michael Ed. Michael, what are some of the highlights for you? I know one of the special moments aspects of this exhibition was meeting up with Chad Morgan. You'd found some photos of his family and stuff. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, there's lots. It was been lots of highlights. Got to say, working with Vernon was a highlight because he said it first. So. But no, meeting Chad Morgan was wonderful. I was aware of his family, particularly after he released the song, The Ballad of Bill and Eva. So I'm always sort of taking note of family connections, and so I realised exactly. I knew the names of his family thanks to that song. And then when I started doing this research, there they all are. And then, so there was the standard portraits, the black and white portraits that everybody else had taken. They were here in the collection. But a few months ago, I was in Adelaide, and I was well aware that there were some colour photos taken by Joseph Birdsall in Cherbourg in 1938. So I actually went to Adelaide. They hadn't been catalogued, and the names hadn't been attached, but I managed to recognise them, and so that was great. The colour photos are now in the exhibition, and we've got some great quotes from Chad talking about the people in the photos, like his great-grandmother and grandmother's sister and cousins that he knew. And also he came to the opening and performed the song, The Ballad of Bill and Eva.
Yes, it was certainly fantastic to hear that song and to see him sing it and perform it. The coloured photos, that's... Rather, unique or different? There's not a lot of coloured photos that can be accessed or were taken?
Well, Tyndale didn't take a lot of scenery-type shots of those communities. He just really took the main standard portraits of the people. So, yeah, these were a real find. And Jeannie Bell, who will be speaking today at the forum, her father's also included in those photos, and other families from Cherbourg.
The symposium today... the connection with the symposium and the exhibition, what is it, and the various speakers?
Well, we've got quite a few speakers today, but I think the main thing is about the exhibition. It's called Transforming Tyndale. It's got the name Tyndale on the exhibition, but really the exhibition is not about Tyndale. It's about a set of photos and how Aboriginal families relate to those photos. So we've been organising this forum for pretty much 6 months now, and it's an opportunity where we're bringing quite a few people together that have had involvements with collecting institutions such as libraries and museums, as well as native title experts, anthropologists, and also other family people who have connections to people in the photos. So it's a chance today. So all the things we didn't say about Tyndale on the exhibition, it's an opportunity to spend the day talking about him, and particularly we'll use the word legacy. He is a huge name in Aboriginal history, native title, linguistics. So we really felt it deserved a day talking about, you know, how he's influenced history.
And how much longer does the exhibition stay here for?
The exhibition will be up till the 9th of December, so it's open 7 days a week here at the State Library, and the budget's not approved or anything yet, but we'd love to see it travel to other places in Queensland, so hopefully that may happen one day.
Vernon mentioned about community feedback. How can people register that feedback? How can they make contact? What do you suggest?
Well, the best thing for now is to come in and look at the exhibition. There's an opportunity there to leave messages, and of course the State Library is very up to date with social media, so there's all, you know, go to the website and sort of leave comments there, and we're very much looking forward to that. I mean, an important part of the exhibition is the quotes that Tyndale recorded from some of the people in the photos in 1938, and some of those quotes are very political, so I'm quite impressed that he actually took the effort to write some of those things down. And then we've gone back and interviewed, again, some of those same people in the photos as well as their families, and so really the quotes are very important, so we're really looking forward to what people have to say about this exhibition.
Well, considering that these photos were taken in 38 or so, some of those people were babies then that you're able to talk to today.
Yep. One of the lovely people we met was relative of Vernon's, Rose Grogan, up at near Caranda. I think she was 10 at the time. She's now 83 in perfect health, and it was great hearing her talk. I guess you could say she had a few negative things to say about the way they were treated that day. But it was great listening to someone talk about actually being lined up and photographed and remembering it well.
Must have been some emotional times there, talking, like showing some of these people, like Rose, photos of her family, of her, a 10-year-old. Must have been some emotional times in these discussions and interviews.
It's been very emotional. I think there's actually a lot of visitors to the exhibition have cried. The library's been kind enough to supply a box of tissues for that very reason. But even myself, I think not so much the photos that were emotional to me, it was the quotes. And when you're looking at the person and hearing these quotes, it was quite emotional.
You found a photo of my grandfather's brother.
Yep, Jack Watson there is, and just another stunning photo. And in the exhibition, there's actually 36 large photos blown up to 2 metres high. So from these tiny little proof prints, the contact prints that were only 2 inch square, so they're only about 50 mil, and now they're blown up to 2 metres. So they're stunning portraits, and it was a tough decision deciding which families to include. But, yeah, your Uncle Jack is one of those ones that got blown up. It really is a stunning photo.
Certainly is. Last question. How did this exhibition come to be, Transforming Tinny and the Symposium? But how did it come to be in the first place?
Well, I guess it's lots of stages to this story. So the first thing was the decision made 20 years ago for the South Australian Museum to allow this set of photos to be copied and placed here in the State Library. And then I think Henrietta Formal will be talking about how she had something to do with that. Lots of people contributed to getting that process happening. Then the people that came in and made the effort to access and find, connect themselves with those photos. But more recently, the big thing, we'll have to give credit to Louise Denoon here at the State Library for, I think she just saw actually an exhibition of Vernon's work in Sydney and said, well, this has to happen in the State Library. We've got this close connection with this set of photos. And then, of course, the state, the South Australian Museum, in particular Ali Abdullah Highfold, that did a brilliant job scanning these photos and giving them access so that we could, and scanning them at a very high standard so we could get make this exhibition what it is.
Well, it's great to see the number of players and people involved, and that it's eventuated into this. You've got to get going. We've got Henrietta 4 Miles going to join us. Thank you very much, Michael, and congratulations, man. This is a fantastic effort. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiger.
Michael Aird, creator, although they prefer to call him curator, I suppose, is that title here. Curator of the exhibition. It's called Transforming Tyndale at the State Library. And thank you to Michael and thank you to Vernon for joining us this morning. But you've got to get on down here to the State Library. It's down part of the, what is it, that South Bank complex, art complex down here. You've got to get down and check this out. It's just amazing. And to talk to us some more about the exhibition and the symposium. The exhibition is called Transforming Tyndale. The symposium is called The Legacy of Tyndale. And that runs today. Henrietta 4 Mile joins me. Henrietta, welcome to the program. How are you?
Thank you. I'm good, thanks. It's nice to be down here for the exhibition.
Tell us your mob, your country.
My people are from Cairns, Gimoy. We call Gimoy the Wallaburra Yidinji people, and that's the land of my father and my grandfathers.
How did you come to be involved in with this Tyndale photos and the exhibition?
I guess my connection with the Tyndale genealogies and photographs go way back in the 80s, it was I heard about the exhibition, which I was pretty keen to have a look at, and it was only through, I guess, my discussion with members of the State Library that they realised that the getting out of the genealogies and the photograph pretty much started in the 1980s when I had a lot to do with the museum cultural heritage of my own people. And I remember that very well. And that really started the process of the information getting out there and people being aware of the Tyndale collection.
How do you feel looking around the work that Michael and, the collective of people that have worked towards this, and now here it is, hanging, ready for community viewing. How do you feel looking at it?
I went through the exhibition this morning, and I'm really impressed. I mean, the photograph, the portrait that are hanging there are really wonderful, and it took me back to the days in early 80s when it was actually in 84 that we were I was looking through the museum to find what was there of our people, and it was in Tyndale was actually visiting in 85, and so I organised a meeting with him. At that time, no one actually had connection or connection to what he had done, and so it was in 85 that we were aware of the photographs, and when I brought down Uncle Clary Grogan, Papa Clary Grogan, and he saw the photographs of course, Granny Rose and others and Mick Miller's parents, and so he then arranged to take copies back to show them, and that's how Mick got copies of the photographs of his father, his grandmother. I mean, his mother and Papa Clary had some photographs of their connection, and that was it was a great time because when we took our old people through the South Australian Museum in early 85, there were a lot of tears. When we went in there, there were a lot of joys of looking through these photographs. And Uncle Monty was another one, Monty Pryor. And, you know, all at different times. But my husband and I took them through and they saw the collection. For the first time, they were seeing a photograph of their grandparents or their mothers and mothers and fathers. And that was a very emotional time. For me, it was, you know, I thought, the question was, why are these here and why aren't they back in the community? Why aren't our people aware of it? And of course, it all came very clear in my research work I did in terms of the genealogies particularly. And it also came very clear when I spoke to Tyndale and recorded Tyndale in February, on the 13th of February, 1985, I remember very well going into the museum and having a discussion with him and asking if I could actually tape him. And his quote, which I am actually going to say in it today, is, these books of genealogy, that is, in a sense, are not supposed to be in existence until after Birdsall's published all of his work. So in real essence, he did not want the photographs nor the genealogies out for any kind of public viewing or access. And it was through that that I then thought, well, how do I get access to these? And but he explained exactly how he went about the research, explained exactly how he had the photographs. And I said, well, I'm carrying out my research work. I'm doing with some studies. And I wrote to him and actually asked him if I could do some access, actually, his work, and which he gave me permission to. And it was really after that that the whole existence of his collection of photographs and particularly the genealogies pretty much came known.
So Birdsall's photos, were they eventually published to allow the access that Tyndale was talking about?
No, they weren't. After my interview, after I talked to him, Tyndale himself didn't finish the book that he wanted to write, and nor did, and I'd imagine, I don't think Birdsall wanted published all the things that he wanted either. But it was through the need. You got to remember back then when there was this flood of inquiry after I had gone out there, and in Yarrabah I took back all these photographs pretty much similar to some of the photographs that are on exhibition here today, and I put them in the council office in Yarrabah because my dad worked there, ask anyone who wanted copies to write their name and give it to my father. So I've got a list of those at home where people had actually written the photograph they wanted with the numbers that are actually allocated to each photograph. So they were very emotional times. I used to get letters asking me to please help us find where we're from, who our mother's people are or our father's people. And these letters I still have copies of, and they were very emotional, and when people would ring me up, they would be crying on the phone, basically, and this was in the early 80s. And back to the museum days, when people were flooding the South Australian with inquiries about these, they had no other choice but to start allowing them to go out. So in their discussion, I guess, at that time, probably in the late 80s, early 90s, Tyndale really had to make the decision, and I think he would have given permission, knowing that, one, as he was getting on in years. But he was 85 years old when I spoke to him in 85.
You had that personal contact with him. What's your impression of him? What was he like? What do you think drove this man?
He was fascinated, and he was passionate about working with people of cultures, and he's a very tall man, and being a small rainforest woman, sitting down beside him, even he was taller than me, so he was kind of enlightening. I was fascinated by the guy. I was really fascinated by him. Fascinated in the sense that he was a man of the era of the 30s. And the language and vocabulary which he uses to describe our people and what he had done was fascinating, because my intention when I went into him was not about the genealogies or the photographs. They were really about the artefacts which he collected from Yarrabah of my people, and the artefacts which even Vernon has on some of his artwork. They were collected from both Yidindji and Kunganji people from Yarrabah. In fact, many of those people were my families whose artefact designs were there. And so I wanted to go in and I wanted to find out more about what he had of Yidindji, Kunganji people. And it was through that interview in which he went away and he came back with these books of genealogies. Fascinated me, because we had a lot to do with the Koori Heritage Group in Victoria and also the Aboriginal people in Tasmania, and they were saying, we know he did some genealogies, but nobody knows where they are, whether they exist, because everyone in the museum, including himself, denied it. And it was until I basically had access to it, cited it for myself, took a photocopy of all the lists of people he'd actually recorded, and said, it's here. And, you know, so what kind of man was he really? As I said, I was really fascinated by him because I went in there with my own agenda to find out more about my people. And, in fact, I got a lot more exposed to me. He was a human being. He had a sense of humour, and which I will be playing on the tape recording I've got. I've actually got sections of the tape that I'm going to be presenting today, and that's going to be my presentation is about him. But it's the language, the half-caste, the ape, because he was really taken by me when I started talking about my father. And, okay, so your grandmother was a half-caste, your father would have been a 7/8 or whatever, and you would be X amount. So all of these language of describing the Aboriginality was just too overwhelming, but I was too sort of interested in, so what else have you got? What else have you got? And, you know, and he just wouldn't listen to me. He would just talk about his journey that he had and this need to get information and, you know, and then he touched on the ownership and said, well, really the primary ownership of the collection is Birdsall and not him. So many of the photographs, and I guess some of the photographs which Michael have also found, there's a lot of them still in the US because of the fact that many of them were not his. They belonged to Birdsall, and he explained that very well, because Harvard University paid for this research. The collection of many of the materials which they collected and information really belonged to Birdsall and not him. He certainly owned many of them, which he willed to the South Australian Museum, but most of it, you know. But what about our rights? It was not considered, so.
Why do you think, then, he didn't want... There was a denial of the actual possession or the whereabouts of them, the actual denial. Why do you think that was?
It was because, coming from him, it was because he wanted to continue to write books about the people he had actually met and who he spoke with. And that was his last thing. He wanted research. He didn't want to be humbugged by phone calls or requests or anything. He wanted to have this information, and he did not want to give it to anybody else.
It's amazing that we're talking about Tyndale, transforming Tyndale and this exhibition. It's amazing the role, I didn't realise, the role you played. You've opened up access for our mob here. I mean, that must be a good feeling to know that you've played such a key role and that so many people can benefit from that. You never knew or never expected this to happen. I mean, how does it feel now, looking back on it and seeing some access to his collection and history?
You know, it feels great. It saddens me because a lot of people never knew my role in actually exposing the Tyndale collection, the Tyndale photographs. And even Michael and Vernon knew nothing about my role in this whole thing. It didn't come out because the South Australian felt the goodwill of let's get it to Queensland and every other state. It really came available because I just basically exposed it through through the legal process. I used the legal realms to get access to it and took a photograph of it, a photocopy of the genealogies and the listing of people he'd recorded. And, you know, I said, just let people be aware that, yes, they were here. And people were then sending in requests. So it feels great. And to see such an exhibition, my first impression was, why didn't it come out a while ago? But the fact is that doesn't matter anymore because it's now there. And as Vernon and both Michael would have said that, you know, it's really about the wordings and the transcripts and the quotes they used. And it is because there's a lot of the information on those data cards that he'd actually have in measuring our people and then talking to them. There were police records he had. There were missionaries records he had. There were baptism records that he had access to. But most importantly, he also spoke to the individuals. he cross-referenced a lot of his work with what they had in the records and what he and when he spoke to the people, and there was a lot of him going. So the kind of insight into the way he went about the research for me was what I needed to know, because he did record my grandmother, and it's my grandmother, my father's mother, that he was recording and taking down data on the 24th of September 1938. And here we are, 74 years later, I'm presenting at this forum on the same date that he recorded my grandmother. And he says that in his... in the tape that I've got, he said, because he was really, he was fascinated by the fact that I'd been there a generation down the track of people that he had recorded back in the 30s. And he was just as overwhelmed with interviewing and talking to me that I was also with him. So it was, it's great to see the exhibition. It would have been great to see, had they connected with me, maybe I would have given a lot of the photocopies of some of the excerpts from my tape and from the letters that were given to me without giving any names or anything on it. So, and I would have been happy to participate in that. But nonetheless, the exhibition is very overwhelming. It's great. When I think of the first day I went in that museum and I recorded him, and he came out with these thick books of genealogies, you know, about 2 inches thick, or there a bit, there, you know, 1.5, 2 inches thick. And he had all of them from Palm Island, Sherbeg, Warrabinda, Yarraba, Mona Mona, and he shared it with me. And I was the first Aboriginal person to cite those genealogies back in the 30s before, and the photographs in which he explained how they were done. Oh, yeah, every name represents a photograph. If there's a number beside it, then there's a photograph. So, it was just overwhelming for me, and to come down now here and to be part of this by chance. It wasn't because no one really knew, as I said, my connection. But
well, tell us, how did people connect you up now? I mean, 85, was 85, was it, you said, when you met Tyndale?
February 1985, 3:30 p.m., I talked to him in the museum.
So how did you get connected up now, and when was that? Because this exhibition, like you say, there could have been more if people had realised your role. So just fast forward, we've got about 2 minutes before the news comes up.
I've given a paper, Aborigines as Captives of the Archives, and in that paper I recorded my connection with Tyndale and everything. But that was in the 90s, and I was living in Brisbane and I was presenting papers. I was letting people be aware of it. But, you know, these are younger fellows who came in, they work in the museum, and you've got an artist, a great way of getting information out there. They didn't know of my work then, because unless you were doing university studies or you were part of the activism of FAIR at the time, you would never have known that that's the connection I had. And it was only through the Traditional Knowledge Centre that they were hearing, they mentioned this, and I said, oh, yeah, I interviewed Tyndale back in, and so the ears propped, the eyes opened up and went, what? The jaws dropped, and they said, you've got to be part of this. And it was only about 3 weeks away ago, 2 weeks ago, that I was actually asked to participate on the panel.
How amazing. What an amazing story you have. All right. Well, it is getting close towards news time. What do you want to say to our mob, our people out there, in regards to this history and accessing and following things up, trying to find out information about their mob, their families?
I'd say now that the South Australian Museum has sent a lot of it here, I think it's really, really important that they have access to this information. My worry was with the information. There's a lot of sensitive data within the genealogies, and the photographs are very, very emotional when you look at them, as you would notice now looking at the exhibition. So come down prepared and be prepared what you hear. And that was my only... I encourage people to come along to the exhibition. I think it's a wonderful exhibition. I do hope they attract the money to the exhibition, particularly throughout Queensland. I hope that I would love to be part of it wherever I can make myself available, and certainly talk about my journey with the repatriation of cultural heritage since 1984, and getting the Tyndale genealogies and photographs out there for Aboriginal people, because even Peter Sutton and Chris Anderson would tell you of my role, and they were great people, but they really hid those things for some years. But you know, go through it, find out. If you're not sure where your people are from, find out what's in the genealogies, and certainly get access to them. Have access to the South Australian Museum, because I don't believe everything from there has actually come to Queensland State Library, so you really do need to get down to the Adelaide Museum to find out more.
Henrietta, it's amazing, this yarn, this interview. The information that's come out is just amazing, and thank you very much for being a part of it. But I'd say this leads to another full-on hour chat with you regarding the repatriation of our old people's remains and things. So we'll be following you up.
Thank you. I'm always happy to talk to you, and it's certainly great yarning with you and getting information out there. But the more you do it, the better, and I'm certainly, yes, happy to do that.
Thank you very much, and it is time to go. Stick around. It is news time. I'm back tomorrow morning on Let's Talk on the First Nations Station. 98.9.